Hello once again. It's Boomer Tech Radio and Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And a new voice,
Alan Belongi.
We are Analog Living in a Digital World. Yes, it is the program that brings you goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, the tech news that you can use. Brought to you here in Northern California on KCNR by Advanced Automotive of Reading. Safe, reliable car care for their customers and our community. You'll find them at 5756 F West Side Road. But we are also going out to the world at large via iTunes. And I discovered, much to my embarrassment, my chagrin, my my Homer Simpson moment. That I had forgotten to a step in putting the subsequent podcasts on the air. So there was only one on the air, and I'm looking at the stats going, why isn't anybody downloading this thing? It's not that bad. And I discovered that it wasn't updating.
Uh-huh. So you forgot to click a little box?
Or... Well, yes. There's an additional step. When I podcast, which is sort of making a resurgence, podcasting's been out for – because Adam Carolla was really one of the original people who really started pushing out the idea.
He's still at it, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's got one of the leading podcasts in the business. And I was trying to think of his name a few minutes ago. But Adam Carolla really pushed out the idea, and he's got he's inspired a lot of podcasts. They're very popular for a while. Then it kind of dropped off. Now it's picking up again, I think, because people are driving around. You can do it at work. You can while at the gym, and if you're not watching the mindless nonsense up on the TV.
Or so. If you're just tired of hearing what
– If you're tired of
all the media outlets have to say, no matter what flavor that is, go to a podcast and – maybe find something more
interesting. You can find everything. I was listening to another tech show today, not to steal his ideas, but because it gives me an idea of where I need to take this show to get maybe a smidgen of a fraction of a percentage of the listening audience that other show has. Nowhere even close.
He has
a staff.
I don't think we're going to steal anybody from there, but yeah. We might get some parallel listeners.
We might pick up some folks anyway. By the way, Alan has at one time dabbled in programming, and he is a millennial who doesn't use a lot of social media, but he does do some gaming, and so he's going to be our go-to guy for what's happening in games. And I'm going to have him actually talk to his friends about what they're doing on social media. So, Alan, you looked at programming, and that's some stuff that can be hard. I certainly never wrap my brain around it.
Yeah, I got into it from more of a passion for video games, but I just never followed through with it. Life happened, you know.
Yeah.
But the more I learn about everything that the programmers and everything go through in the video game industry, there's so much corporate meddling, and when they put deadlines on people that they couldn't possibly meet, it just turns out some really terrible products in the end.
Then fire you if you don't meet those expectations, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't find programming to be too terribly difficult because it's a little bit like math, you know, and it's very logical. Step one, two, three, four, right. And then you can loop back to. So once you know the language, the shorthand, if you will, of programming, it's not that complicated, but you can make very sophisticated and complicated programs, though. So you kind of have to keep all that stuff straight in your head. Where am I? Where am I going? It's sort of like having this file cabinet in your head is the way I looked at it. And you got to remember what the previous step somewhere up there does. But I'm really dating myself. I had punch cards when I first learned.
So mostly you're – now, in the world of programming, it doesn't matter whether you're a Mac guy or a Microsoft guy. Most of it happens in Linux anyway. Right.
It's just the language. What language you're working in, Python, Java, whatever.
When you're down to the machine level or assembler level, it's –
That's a little different.
It doesn't matter. Operating systems, I mean, that's like Ford and Chevy, you know. It's although Mac is Apple's losing share in the schools, and they're going to have to we've talked about this. They're going to have to up their game because the Microsoft Surface is going to take over where the MacBook Pro has owned the the genre for since the 1980s. They're going to have to do something about it. But I'm sitting here. Alan's on an older model Windows. Brenda's on her Android tablet. I've got my iPad Pro and my MacBook Pro, which is getting kind of old, but it still works fine. So
your command center.
Yeah, we got quite the command center. We have screens everywhere. I've mentioned this before. Our main computer here in the studio that runs all of the stuff that keeps this radio station on the air is actually running on a DOS-type system because it doesn't need to be tied to the internet.
Don't fix it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it is quite stable, so that helps.
Yeah, and it's inside a Windows 95 shell, but it's just a pure DOS. Hit the Alt key to do something and tab and enter, and it's fun.
So, Alan, I'm going to put you on the spot. How come you are not into social media?
Don't find it interesting.
Right on, brother.
I have much better things to be doing with my time than sitting there and seeing what everyone else is doing.
I can relate to that completely. I do check up on my friends' activities, which for some of them it's all about their kids, and that's like, okay. I do a lot of scrolling through there. And, occasionally there's
a
fun
cat
thing.
You do pause for cat videos.
Well, yeah, because some of them are entertaining. But, you know, if you wait long enough, they all come back, so... it's sort of like reruns on television. So it's like, oh, saw that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I get all my internet socializing just through forums, all the mm-hmm. old style of looking through the internet.
So when you do game, do you do mostly standalones or do you do MMOs or what?
I enjoy single player games mostly, but I do play MMOs fairly regularly. They're massively multiplayer online games. So... It's sometimes nice to just be able to sit down and do what you want to do, but
yeah,
it's also nice to share the experience with other people.
Yeah, those are good points. That's what your dad says.
I'm still working my way through Skyrim, and yeah, I've tried Elder Scrolls Online, and it's just not the same experience because you got 3,000 other people all stumbling over each other, trying to steal stuff from each other, and it's nicer just to go through the storyline.
I'm the outlier here. It's like social media. I don't see a point of gaming online because I don't have time for that either.
I understand that.
But especially with a game like Skyrim or Fallout, you'll wind up just looking at the sky and going, wow, that is like really detailed.
You mean they have some good weather in there?
They actually do, and it's getting better. There's actually patches.
Or realistic-looking weather,
there's
I should say.
Not patch with it.
Mods.
Mods for Skyrim that let you have changeable weather, and you can actually – now, most – some of them get pretty esoteric, like in Skyrim, there's a mod where you have to eat and you have to take care of business or you get sick.
Some of them go a little too far.
They go a little bit too realistic, yeah. Well, yes, when it comes to female armor, less is more.
Whatever the armor rating is.
Of course.
The more skin, the higher the armor rating.
It's just like I was remarking about something we were watching the other day, full-on female nudity. And nothing. You don't even get a backside of the guys.
Not even a tushy. Huh?
Not even a tushy. And I'm like, man, how disappointing is that?
Anyway, back to with the podcast. We now, this will be our fourth official episode to go up on iTunes, so you can subscribe. I'm going to change the bit rate of the program, but you probably won't notice the difference in sound quality.
Shouldn't.
Now, real quickly... when it comes to how to do digital sound, the most basic is what's called a WAV file, which is essentially the same kind of signal that goes on your CD.
Those are
on a compact disc.
A file with the extension
WAV.
WAV, mm-hmm. Right.
And that's been around for quite a while, and it's non-compressed, and it is sampled at a rate about 44 kilohertz. Why 44 kilohertz? Because that's about twice the range of human hearing. And if you want to sample something digitally, you want your samples to be happening at twice the rate of your highest frequency in order to accurately reproduce it. But WAV files are freaking humongous.
Yep. Really big.
Yeah.
Really big.
A WAV file of this entire show occupies about 3 gigabytes of data. Well, back in the early days of when storage was extremely expensive, three gigs was...
ginormous.
That was a whole hard drive. So lots of different schemes, and one of the earliest ones and still the most popular is MP3, and I'm not even sure what MP3 stands. I used to know what the acronym stood for, MPEG, Motion Picture Entertainment Group, I believe. It's a standard of compression, and you can set it for different quality levels. And if you're listening to music on the internet, usually the bit rate that you are listening to is either 256 or 128 kilobytes per second. That's how much data is being run through it. And the higher the bit rate, the smoother the smoother the quality.
So MP3 is Moving Pictures Expert Group Layer 3 Audio.
Yes, thank you. That was something. And now, of course, most video is MPEG 4. And, in fact, your DVDs were done in what's called MPEG 2. So these are different standards for compression of audio and video.
And the what's interesting, though, if you say MPEG 4, it's the same group, just the fourth level, right?
Yeah.
Sort of like the next gen? Or is it like a codec in video? You know, it's a formatting thing?
We can get really deep into codecs versus wrappers versus formats.
And yeah, too technical.
That gets way into the engineer stuff. But suffice it to say that we're going to encode these episodes down at 64K bits a second, and you won't be able to tell the difference, but I'll be able to get more of them on the air at the same time.
Right. It's just show takes up less space.
Right. The files are smaller.
So, but my point was they have MPEG 4, but they say MP3, why not MPEG 3? You know, it's the same thing.
Well, once upon a in the early days, and I don't know if Alan even remembers these days. Once upon a time, file names had to be 8 characters plus a dot and then 3 more characters.
Yep.
That was the old DOS file name format. And you had to, that's why you still to this day see really weird file names that are only 8 characters, a dot, and then 3, and then a suffix.
So the extension 3-letter version is MP3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the early days of DOS, you had to get pretty creative with your file names. Yeah. You'd look at these really cryptic 8-character names and go, what the hell is that supposed to
be? Lots of acronyms.
Acronyms and leaving the vowels out didn't work, right?
Yeah, 256-character file names really made life a whole lot easier. Anyway, so if you do happen to stumble across us on iTunes, I would take it as a deep personal favor if you would add the show and subscribe, because it just warms my heart. Likewise, if you have a mobile device, or even if you're on your PC, get the Flipboard app and then subscribe to Boomer Tech Radio. Very easy to do. And that's what where we reference a lot of the stories that get some ideas from to bring to the air. And Alan, you had you heard of Flipboard before? It's a news aggregator.
I had not until you brought it up to me.
Yeah, it's one of the better aggregators out there.
It looks like it. Figured it out almost immediately.
Yeah, it's pretty intuitive. It's a nice little app to look at.
Well, when you're setting up your account, you answer sort of a questionnaire about what topics appeal to you. And then it will start feeding you stories that are in line. And it'll actually, if you start following certain threads, it'll start suggesting more stories.
I haven't figured out, though, why I keep getting Flipboard stuff on my smartphone when I don't even have the Flipboard app on my smartphone. So it must be my tablet sending me notifications or Flipboard, period. And it's kind of annoying. It loads up my notifications list on my smartphone.
Speaking of smartphones, we have all three of us are Samsungs, I do believe. Is that?
Yes. Okay. It's an S6.
So we got an S6, two S7s, and the S8 just came out. We're going to talk about that later on. Just came out later on in the show. But we're going to run down a couple of stories here. And now, one of the things that if I am at one end of the house and I hear, I won't say screaming, fairly loud, colorful,
pointed commentary
about battery drain.
Ah, yes, that was an interesting experience. I still don't understand that one.
It seems like every time there's an update to anyone's operating system, the battery life goes in the toilet. Why is that?
That's a good question. So,
optimization,
Yeah, except that they're lying. They don't optimize it in the update. It doesn't work.
It reverse optimizes.
What puzzles me is, so I took a page out of your book, Bob, and I Googled that. And I hate those forums because there's a lot of questions. People ask questions, and the answers are just stupid. They're nothing. It's more like reading comments on somebody's Facebook YouTube page or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Whatever, where people can comment on things. And I'm like, this is not helpful.
Yeah.
So, see, I don't have the patience. Right. I don't have the patience to scan through things like you do, Bob, or I don't have the secret sites or whatever. I just haven't taken the time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I said, okay, taking another page out of your book, Bob, I said, I'm just going to shut the Wi-Fi off for a while. And so I did. I shut it off for about 24 hours, and then when I turned it back on, because rebooting didn't change anything. You would think that would shut the Wi-Fi down and all of that. It didn't. So I shut the Wi-Fi off, and there were indications in there was something to do with Wi-Fi. So I shut the Wi-Fi off, let it sit for 24 hours. Took me that long to get back to it, and turned it back on. Been fine ever since.
Well, the latest version of Android, Nougat, I noticed an improvement in my battery life. Now, one of the biggest things, if you have a mobile phone, one of the best things you can do for your battery life is get the stupid Facebook app off of it.
Yeah.
That drains battery like no tomorrow when you get that running.
I don't know what the hell.
Feels like you got a quarter inch hole in a bucket, man.
Connection they've got that they're, how much data they're siphoning out of your life, but
it wants to constantly check for updates as soon as they're available.
Yeah, and for some people that's important. For me, it's important to be able to actually get to 7 o'clock and still have a usable phone.
Bill Gates and Zuckerberg are often held in effigy in our house.
Well, in this case, we're talking about an iOS device. iOS 10.3, a lot of people have been talking about battery drain problems ever since the update. There's a few things you can check. First of all, if you go into settings, battery, now this is on iOS, but Android phones have similar settings. See what apps are having the greatest impact on your battery life and try to limit your use or, heck, get rid of the ones that are just taking out the highest percentage of your battery. Background app refresh. Now, again, this is probably in a different place if you have an Android phone, but in the iOS, you want to check and make sure that background app refresh is turned off because most apps don't need it. If you go into settings, general, background app refresh, look at most of your mostly that's Facebook, social media. So that might improve your Facebook if you turn down the background refresh. Where only on my Skype on my iPad, I have it set to only refresh when the app is up, and my iPad battery is much better than it was. Moving. What do they call it? Living wallpaper,
that can be a bit of a power
motion
drain.
Wallpaper is moving pixels around on your screen. That's going to take a chunk out of your battery.
Yep.
So if you go into into settings, general accessibility, switch the reduce motion feature, and then save your battery. Turn off raise to wake. So, this is a feature that is for lazy people. Where now both Android and Apple are doing, where you pick the phone up and the screen comes to life, waiting for you to input the unlock thing. Doesn't need to. I mean, God forbid you should actually have to push a button to wake your phone up.
And your pocket's just going to turn it on over and over.
Well, that's what I was thinking. As soon as you put it in a bag or anything, that motion's going to turn it on. That was one of those things, where you have the when you have the watch that will light up when you turn it a certain way or whatever, it just drains the battery.
Here's a favorite one of mine. If you don't have to have your location services on, turn them off.
I leave mine off.
And I do too.
And this is especially parents. If you like to snap lots of pictures of the kids, fine. If you want to share them, that can be creepy because your kid's going to come back after you in 20 years and say, why did you do that? But every time you snap a picture with a smartphone with location services on, you may have just told a bad guy where your kid hangs out. Do you want that?
All that gets saved in the EXIF data on those photos you take.
Right, and they can that can be decoded and whatnot. They know where I'm. The company can figure out where my phone is anyway without location services on. Well, you know, the parents posting on Facebook with the kids is the modern day version of the Super 8 film that of the time of our generation, Bob.
Another trick to save some battery life. Turn off those push notifications unless you really need them. Every stinking app's going to want to turn your push notifications on. Every one of them takes a bite out of your battery. Likewise with your Bluetooth. If you don't particularly need to be using a Bluetooth speaker or headset or keyboard or the Apple Pencil or whatever, turn the stupid thing off. Turn it on only as necessary, and your battery will thank you. And now... I know that Nougat does it, but you probably have ice cream sandwich still on your phone. Does it nag you once a week to reboot the phone?
Only when there's an update around.
Okay. The thing they're doing at Nougat is that if 7 days go by and you haven't restarted your phone, it says you should probably go ahead and restart your phone, which is a good thing because it clears out a lot of old stuff. Or sometimes you'll just want to completely power down and power back up to clear out the memories.
That's what I like to do anyway, like with my laptop or desktops that I use, is just go ahead and do a power down. The restarts, to me, seem to leave crumbs and bits and pieces behind. They don't clean stuff out. Yeah.
Another good thing to do is to actually make sure you close apps that you're not using anymore. Somehow that list omitted that.
Right, on iOS,
good point.
Double push the home key and flick to close each app. On Android, you've actually got the handy little
close all
app key where you open up all your existing apps and they accumulate. Close them all and your battery life is going to improve.
Maybe that's what I should have done on the tablet too.
Yeah,
just to be sure. I think I did, but...
Yeah. Hey,
things are better now.
Yeah. So, a lot of... When we come back after the bottom of the hour break, we want to talk about robots. And there's a discussion about, is the internet actually destroying society? Real interesting.
Probably.
Well, yeah. Well, that's been one of those things about how, you know, falls into the broader category of technology is going to be the end of us as a species, right?
Yep. So before we take the break, I want to tell you, if you want to get in touch with us, boomertechradio@gmail.com. The website, my blog, where you'll see latest episodes. It's a WordPress blog. You can see the episodes, and you can catch reviews that we're starting to do. We'll have a review for later on in the show. That's boomertechradio.com. Sign up and download some of the applications. Sign up and download an episode. Leave a comment. That's where you can put in suggestions for future shows. And if you want to find out, maybe somebody hearing Alan's voice will want to get a picture of Alan. So we'll set him right up with that.
He's a handsome young man.
He is a handsome young man. It's Boomer Tech Radio. We're having way, way too much fun. And when we come back from the break, we've got more of the tech news that you can use after this. And we are back. Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob. She's Brenda. He's Alan. Having tech news that you can use. Like to cover quite a few things. So, Alan works for a hardware outfit. I won't say which one. It's a local outfit up here.
Or regional.
But you... Now, what do you do, just in rough terms? Do you stock shelves or something?
No, if there's something wrong with a stock-keeping unit or SKU in the system, I fix it, fill out POs for everybody, and not quite IT, but pretty close to it.
Okay. So are you reasonably confident that this is something that an automated system is still going to have some supervision? You're going to be the supervisor of the machine.
I automate most of my work anyway, but... No, it's a lot of it does require the eye of a intelligence at this point.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's especially because the whole point of me being there for the most part is to make sure somebody's paying attention to what's happening overall. Because a lot of times all the different stores we have are all linked together in certain mm-hmm. ways, and I don't want this store to be doing something that this store doesn't want to happen. So, like, if someone says, this SKU needs to be linked to this barcode, all of our barcodes are universal, mm-hmm. And so I'm the one that decides which one where it should go.
So I would say that within your lifetime, you would be instructing the restocking robots where to put products on the shelves. It's conceivable that within your lifetime you'll be doing, you know, that will be part of you. Rather than having the people come in at night to restock the shelves and aisles, that you will have something like an Amazon set up where mechanisms are, because the robots are getting cheaper and easier to and better at their jobs. So I could see you doing something like that. Does that? But as far as making sure that stuff goes where it goes, you do have to have some kind of human input on that.
Right. You do need to coordinate it somewhat, especially with changes. Computers don't do changes all that great right now. But
computers / robotics are very good at simple tasks done repetitively very quickly.
It does very good at those.
Simple, repetitive, quick is the very essence of what fast food is all about. So,
at least on one level, anyway.
Within the next decade, and we've talked about this, you know, it was a big victory, quote unquote, for the California State Legislature when they pushed through the $15 an hour minimum wage here in California. What that's done, though, is these companies have said, you know, we need to think about this because those costs are only going to go up. And already you're starting to see kiosks in the lobbies of fast food places.
When I was in London, I ordered a McDonald's hamburger from a kiosk and then just went and picked it up after it was done. It was kind of interesting. It's just kind of a glimpse into where we're going.
Yeah. And in restaurants nowadays, you can already order, at most major restaurants, you can already order on the table side your drinks, appetizers, from essentially a heavy-duty tablet that's chained to the table.
Based on a recent experience I had at a McDonald's, I would have welcomed a kiosk, quite frankly. The order might have been correct.
So these jobs are going to go away. What else is going to go away? Clerical-type work, work that consists of reading something off of a form and typing it into a keyboard. That's all going to go bye-bye. Taking something off of a keyboard and fulfilling an order, that's going to go bye-bye. Looking up legal advice, which is what a lot of paralegals do. They're paid to sit there, go through a book, and look something up. Once you've got all that material digitized, it's a whole lot easier to give a AI the parameters that you're looking for, and it goes and gets them in a fraction of the time and at a fraction of the cost, because you only have to install the system once. You have to keep it up to date, but it doesn't take sick leave. It doesn't take smoke breaks. It doesn't go on maternity leave.
Have to pay workman's comp.
You don't have workman comp.
Google law coming soon.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me, because if you think about it, really, law is written down, and it's a very searchable thing, sort of like going through a PDF document, right, looking for certain phrases or what have you. Obviously, there's some interpretation that has to take place.
The key will be making sure that the algorithms that's looking through everything actually understands what you're talking about. And they're definitely getting better at that. But
when it comes to would you like fries with that? That's something that any computer, you know, that it no longer takes a degree in social sciences, in liberal arts. That's right. It no longer takes a liberal arts degree to be able to ask somebody if they want French fries.
Hey, even with a bachelor's of science, I was willing to flip burgers at Burger King if I had to earn money right after I got out of school. But I was fortunate enough not to have to do that.
So Yum Brands runs KFC, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut. During an interview with CNBC, Greg Creed said that AI robots and automation could start replacing workers in the global food services industry by the mid-2020s. I'm actually thinking it's already underway.
Everything's happening sooner than people think.
Yeah, it is indeed.
Except flying cars. But.
Well,
yeah,
we
didn't get the flying cars.
Well, that's true. We could have those, though. I think it's a matter of cost and airspace and a few other things.
So even Starbucks has an app to order your coffee, so it's theoretically ready. And what they discovered is that the app is so popular that it's backlogging the baristas, and lines are even worse than they were ever before. So what's the next step is that a lot of these places, I expect that Starbucks is going to be automating their coffee process a great deal because they want a – what is Starbucks stock and trade?
Consistency.
Consistent product. That's why they overburn the coffee, why they over-roast the coffee beans. So it tastes the same. Yeah, it all tastes burnt.
That's why a friend of ours calls it Charbucks.
So if you are looking for an absolutely consistent product, what's the thing computers do very nicely? They can do the same task over and over again reliably.
The same, same specifications.
Barista robots are on the horizon. Now, there will still be specialty shops where you can order something. Well, especially here's the difference between my local favorite coffee place, Dutch Bros, and Starbucks. If you you can't ask for something that's off the menu at a Starbucks. I mean, it is the and I hope I'm not insulting anybody who happens to work for Starbucks, but come on, the creativity factor is pretty lacking there.
Well, give them something not expecting deer in the headlights.
Yeah, exactly.
What? No, they can't do it. They have their menu and that's it. It's fixed. There's no deviation from that. You can go to other places and say, I want this or that or whatever. And they're like, right on, no problem.
Yeah, Dutch Bros, they give your dog a biscuit. I mean, you know.
Well, I think they might at some Starbucks, too. I'm not sure.
So it's not happening tomorrow, but it is happening soon. You know, what could possibly go wrong? Well, I don't see the robots taking baths in the deep sink at the back of the KFC.
You can start seeing, I can definitely envision vending machines or a couple of vending machines essentially right outside of Starbucks that you can order from or order through your smartphone and then just pick it up once you get there.
Yeah.
You don't even need to go inside more than
likely. Or you're in the line in your car
and
you punch it in. Yeah.
Or you have like the post office where, you know, your order's in box number 5 and here's the code. And it'll open up the door.
So, Ellen, you were looking at... In the UK, they are rolling out, literally, Meals on Wheels that looks like an ice chest with tires on it. What's going on there?
Yeah, in England, Domino's is starting to roll out these wheeled robots that contain whatever pizza you order. And you can – it's almost completely without people other than the people that make the sandwich themselves.
Yeah.
You order your pizza, you send it all through your smartphone, and in about 30 or 40 minutes, the drone wheels up to your door. Your smartphone gets the alert saying, I'm outside. Go out there, punch in a code that's also on your smartphone, and it opens up for you. You can grab your pizza and give it your money, or pay with your card, probably through your smartphone. And then it drives off back to the store. Unfortunately, it only has a range of about a mile or so it doesn't go very far. Plus, they don't want it to go too far away, otherwise people might steal it.
Well,
but
in an urban environment, though, it really wouldn't have to go very far to be able to serve a lot of people.
Then,
do you have to go, you know, you got to go down to the sidewalk or the front door or whatever, I suppose, to talk to this thing. According to this article from Quartz, that we have posted, Bob has posted on the Flipboard, Boomer Tech Flipboard, Domino's is their stock is taking off because they finally quit making pizza that tasted basically like cardboard with tomato sauce on it.
It was pretty bad for a long time.
Yeah. When I was in college, that tells you how far back that goes. If you ordered Domino's, you were sort of like desperate in the sense that you could afford it, but why would you want to eat it?
Like, it's not pizza at a certain point.
Yeah. In those days, that's true.
You have to
question whether it was you could legitimately call it pizza or not, for sure. But since they've improved their thing, I guess their stock has taken off like crazy and is way above Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, and other, you know, juggernauts like that. Oh. That's kind of crazy.
Sometimes quality is nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then when you have the robotic delivery thing, it might be faster than if they'd put it in a car.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's something that Brenda and I have gone back and forth on a few times. She thinks this is about the king of bad ideas because she is a produce Nazi. and another, also coming to us from the UK, Amazon wants to have your daily fresh food through Amazon Fresh. Now, rather than have a robot delivered, you punch in your order and then you go to a pickup location and the friendly person there will load it into the back of the car for you. And you pay through your application, so no money changes, no cash changes.
Right, right.
But the thing is, somebody else is picking your produce. And for Brenda, that's a deal killer. Right?
I don't like that. Yeah. You know, I don't buy the dead lettuce. I'm sorry. Ain't happening. I go pick the freshest stuff that I can find. But, you know, it is conceivable that before too long, I'm not going to have that option.
Won't be able to squeeze your own oranges before
that's
you get them.
That's right. You know, I like to heft those oranges.
But I think that consumer feedback is going to be a big motivator for these companies to make sure that they aren't pushing, you know, rotten, messed up junk out the door. Because
well,
it'll only take a few complaints from people to kill that business.
Yeah, but, you know, when something's $2.49 a hit or whatever, I'm going to find the biggest one I can. Get my money's worth, you know. And if they just randomly pick that for you. There are a lot of grocery stores that will, you know, put together your groceries for you, swing by, pick them up, have them delivered, whatever. I think Fred Meyer's in Oregon does that, for instance. They'll collect up things and then you just can come by and get it. But and there's services, of course, that'll do that for you as well. But that's a human going in and picking things up. That's not a robotic type thing.
Yeah. So when I was pretty much Alan's age, the internet was just starting to get traction. And we heard about the free and open that international borders would essentially cease to exist. Ideas would flow freely because no one could own the internet. It was a very egalitarian, very equal, and open place. Well, human nature says otherwise about these things. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say from a technical standpoint, it's not like a corporation does own the internet in terms of
right.
as an entity. So anybody can put anything from anywhere on the internet, and that, and so
much
in that
to
sense,
the panic of many governments,
of course, but
China particularly.
Yes, the point is that in that sense, it's free and open. But what's on there and what's done with it—that's a different story, right?
Yeah,
or potentially a different story.
So we've had the rise of the dark web. Now, illegal materials, pornography, especially child porn, spread via the web. That happens with any new medium. As I've mentioned on this show, one of the drivers behind the adoption of videotape, home VHS, was the porn industry. With movies and being able to time shift a football game running a little bit behind. So cyberspace is a place to freely and intelligently exchange and discuss ideas and sort of descended into a massive and that this is nowhere else is this more true than on Twitter and Facebook, because the mean side of people come out. And when you can be nasty to someone anonymously,
well,
that just seems to just be all some people need. And have you found yourself on the receiving end of somebody's flame or trolls or anything?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's almost inevitable being on the internet. But a lot of people my age are fully able to deal with it. You know, that whole phrase, haters gonna hate. Just trying to think of how to put it.
that we can actually say on here.
No, but it's sort of like a life skill that you have to learn and maybe not take it so personally or something?
Yeah, you just know that you put it through the filter know that they're being either incredibly brutally honest or extra brutal just because there's not going to be any repercussions about it. And in some ways, I kind of like that, in that they can be fully honest or even exaggeratingly honest, because while you know that what they're saying is not necessarily true, it might be in the direction that someone might not be willing to say to your face. That's how I feel about it for a lot of things. Not everything, but
So you view it as potentially helpful.
Right, it can be. Especially with a critique of a creative medium. People are a lot more willing to say, well, possibly terrible things or at least very critical things about creative media through a guise of anonymity just because they don't got to worry about being reprised.
Yeah, you have to face that person, which is, like you say, both good and bad. It can be brutally honest, very direct and pointed, but at the same time, it can also be very mean and mean-spirited.
So you've got to make sure if you're on the receiving end, you got to put it through that filter that you know that they're being what they are, and you shouldn't try to consider that the same as somebody saying to your face, this is terrible or this sucks. Because
they don't have the guts to say it to your face.
Yeah.
Or it's just not socially acceptable, too.
Yeah, there's that, too.
It may cost them a tooth or two.
That's a good point. That's a really great point of view.
It is. I'm trying to figure out where I want to. So anyway, is internet destroying society, like this headline says? I think it has made the abundance of connection has made us more disconnected. I would submit that.
I think social media has for sure. Yeah. Everybody's checking up on everything, and when you check up on everything, nothing matters.
Marshall McLuhan.
Good point. Yeah, what becomes valuable?
Yeah,
right.
When you're inundated with everything and whatever, you know, what do people value? What becomes valuable? What matters? Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alfred Toffler and Marshall McLuhan warned us decades ago about the information overload that we, as a species, weren't made to process this much raw input day in and day out. And it's no wonder that psychoses, it's no wonder that so many people are resorting to various chemical means to try to cope with it, because you're just inundated, and it has never been worse, I don't think, than this last year, especially on the political front. I turned my back on Facebook for several weeks because the roadkill just got over the top, and I still... I will use Facebook to promote this program. I will glance at it occasionally, but I'm very fast on the stop following button when somebody goes off on their view on how the election should have gone, or we're talking 6 months now. Maybe it was 3 months now, but still. Let's move on, you know.
Well, or my view is, let's do something productive. Don't.
Right, exactly. Be you know, if you want to make a change, don't sit there and whine. Make a change.
Or get involved.
The internet and social media practically is a chemical dependence for a lot of people. Whenever you get a notification or you get a update or your text message or whatever, you get
same
the little
portion of the brain,
little burst of serotonin in your head. You just, I got to get another one. So you just constantly look and check and want to get one more check into your feed just to see that you got another one maybe. Sometimes you just need to put it down, let your thoughts happen rather than have your thoughts dictated to you by
others or ruled by this device or the Pavlov's bell there. So, Alan, what do you think happens, you know, young folks like you that are not terribly into social media, then in a face-to-face capacity, do you get ostracized for that? It's like, what's the matter with you? You don't social media? What's wrong with you, right?
A lot of people look at me weird when I tell them I don't have whatever it is they have. I mean, my boss, 40-plus-something-year-old, told me to get the WhatsApp app or whatever because... that was the best way for him to communicate with me when he was out of country. But it's like, what is that again? I think I've heard of it. He looked at me funny. Like, I have no need for it. I can call people or even send them a text message.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, but you do go so far, obviously, as to text with that remark.
Well, right.
It's very handy to be able to text people, but you're right. It's like, how fancy of an app do you really need to do that, right?
Yeah, and unless you're speaking with people that you don't really know, whether you don't need any of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, a lot of journalists, you know, the whole thing of Insta news, you know, getting and being out there with the news absolutely first has led to a lot of just misinformation. Programs are being written to crank out fake news. And I have a very big concern about things like Periscope and Facebook Live.
Yeah, potentially.
We've already had live in-action sexual assault. And like I said, I'm making a prediction. God help me, I hope I'm wrong, that somebody is going to stage a racial event to whip a crowd into a riot and be and to cause as much whether it be just for the sake of doing it or to serve as a distraction for something else.
I think, to me, when folks are distracted, like you say, Alan, on the little dings and buzzes and whatever out of the device, and that that is their life, that they kind of give up any kind of creativity or original thought or curiosity or what have you. It seems like that all derails a person from developing that.
Like, it's hard for me to really judge people too bad when I see them sit there on their phone looking at Facebook all day, when I can sometimes sit there on my computer playing a game all day. But but it doesn't feel like, at the end of the day, I feel I've enjoyed myself in my hobby. I've done whatever productive thing I wanted to do within the confines of the game. However, a lot of times, if you sit there and just look at Facebook all day, you just get depressed.
You do.
Because somebody else's life was being lived, or they did something cool.
We live vicariously for others. That's all the time for this hour. We've got another hour of Boomer Tech Radio coming up with Bob and Brenda and Alan. Stay tuned for the tech news that you can use after the top of the hour break. Hello once again, Boomer Tech Radio with Bob Belongi,
Brenda Belongi,
and Alan Belongi.
Yes, we are the triad here this week. We're adding Alan to the mix.
We're expanding.
Yeah, we are expanding our... We have made a 50% increase in our production staff.
We still have no staff, though.
To go along with it. Yeah, and one of the things that I'm probably going to have Alan start doing is actually keeping the show notes, because we ramble. I get off on these things, and I try to go back when I do the show notes for the WordPress. I go, what the hell did we talk about?
Alan's like, this is news to me. Thanks.
Alan may get tasked with doing the show notes, plus bringing us up to date on some games and things like that. What's are you keeping up? What's the hot game right now?
The latest announcement is Destiny 2 just got announced.
Okay. Yeah.
Destiny's
what's that all about?
It's a first-person shooter, MMO, massively multiplayer online. I wasn't really very interested in the first one, and a lot of people have a lot of complaints about the first one, but it did have one of the biggest launch of all times. It was a console exclusive. The big news this time for Destiny 2 is that it's also coming to the PC.
Yeah.
Oh, got more power behind it.
Bungie is the company that is producing Destiny 2. So is this also on consoles?
Right. It's coming to consoles and PC.
Mm-hmm.
What's a console? Is that like
at consoles the like the Nintendo or the Xbox, etc.?
Yeah, see, I don't know these things.
Fair enough.
Do you find in terms of the multiplayer ones? Do you see a lot of women in there?
Like for players?
Yeah.
It really depends on the type of game.
An increasing number. Fallout has a lot of women players. Skyrim had a lot of women players.
Right.
And World of Warcraft, half of them were women.
I don't think it was quite half, but it was pretty close. A lot of MMOs tend to have a lot more girl players than something like Destiny. Well, MMORPGs, I should say, tend to have a lot more girl players than...
role play as opposed to Twitch games.
Right. Like, Destiny is kind of a hybrid between the two. It's got, you sit there with the gun on screen, and you move around, you try to shoot that guy and shoot that guy, etc. There's not a lot of girls playing those in comparison to guys, but it is evening out nowadays.
Yeah, the games like Elder Scrolls Online, World of Warcraft especially, they actually have storylines and a lot of interaction between people that are just trying to blow each other away. There's still plenty of blowing each other away or zapping them with a spell.
They give you a reason to do it.
Yeah, you have to involve your feelings. Okay, changing gears here. I've been asked to actually do some reviews. Brenda's been seeing packages turn up on the porch, you know. And,
yeah, we live where the package thieves haven't made it that far out yet.
Well, don't give them any ideas.
I don't know.
So we haven't had to get the locker done yet. But, Alan, do you use any Bluetooth speakers?
I have a Bluetooth headset. I brought a high-quality Bluetooth headset just so I can listen to things.
It's nice not to have those wires.
Yeah, it's all – my big thing was wireless so I can walk around the house while listening.
I like that too.
Well, Bluetooth used for audio, at least the older version, the current version of Bluetooth, there's a new version coming. But it's a little like cassette tapes. When cassette tapes first came out, they were meant for voice dictation. They were intended to be used in an office. And somebody said, oh, this would be great for doing music. Well, they had to play all kinds of electronic tricks to get the sound quality acceptable. Nowadays, you listen to a cassette tape and you go, my God, we thought that was good. Same with VHS. We once thought that 240 lines of resolution with the, and the tracking control, that was watchable. And now you look at a VHS tape and you go, oh my God. And so it is with Bluetooth speakers. Now, I talked last week about the iClever folding keyboard, and that's part of this box of products at iClever, which is a major Chinese manufacturer. They sell a lot of stuff through Amazon. Bluetooth speakers are popular and getting more so because, as Brenda said, you don't have to run the wires to them. Same with the headsets because you can do stuff. But there's a little – it's like wire vinyl records making a comeback, because if you listen to a vinyl record – and then you listen to a CD, you there's a difference. And so it is with Bluetooth. Bluetooth takes that sound and crunches it down even more to be able to send it over the wireless link. And so companies have, but a lot of big name companies, you got Klipsch, you've got Bose, you've got Sony. A lot of companies are putting their names on Bluetooth speakers, and the sound quality tends to vary. Now, we've got a Bose SoundLink Mini, which is actually, for something that's the size of a Blackboard eraser,
not too bad.
Pumps out an astonishing level of sound. It's this thing is like it's literally weighs about as much as a brick. But the downside with the Bose is that it has a charging cradle. So you've got to pack that around, and then you got a wall wart, and you got to pack that around. So now you got three things to keep track of.
Not very portable at that point,
right? Well, and the battery life is okay, but if you're on the road, you're going to want to recharge the thing. Now we've also got an iHome outdoor speaker that's completely waterproof when the ports are sealed, but it has its own power supply. Another thing to lose track of. So I was real interested when iClever sent me their BTS-08 Bluetooth speaker. It's a little bit larger than the iHome or the SoundLink. It's not quite a foot wide, about 3 inches high, very distinctive red color. What's amazing, though, is that this thing really pumps out some sound. Brenda heard me playing with this thing the other night. I had Leonard Cohen going on this thing.
Yeah. For that a speaker that size, which you normally don't expect a lot of bass out of, this thing didn't actually need to be sitting on something, too. That's kind of how they – whatever technology they're using when those little speakers
sit. Yeah, the
Bose
tells you to stick it in a corner so it'll reflect off the corner and
right.
Fill the room a bit more.
So a little bit of audio trickery to get you to hear that bass, but that iClever speaker does bass quite well without those restrictions.
Another interesting thing, instead, you know, most of these speakers have a button that you got to mash that thing for half a minute to get the stupid speaker to turn on
or to
put
sync.
It into pairing mode.
Yeah. Syncing is an issue.
And you go to put it into pairing mode and you turn it off and you have to start all over again.
You have had your frustrations with
trying
to pair up your Bluetooth.
Well, instead of that push and hold forever on off button, the iClever has a slide switch. Who would have thought? On, off. Hey.
Wow. How analog.
The slide switch is on the back panel next to a USB charging port. Now, this is the neat thing. The iClever doesn't even come with a power supply because you can reuse the power supply you're using to charge your phone if it has the standard micro USB, which, of course, Apple doesn't bother with. But you can get an adapter to go from your Lightning connector to a micro USB. I believe Brenda has one, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's really nice because that way you don't have to pack around two power cords.
The top of the speaker has four touch controls, and these are really nice. They're not, you know, they're not rubberized buttons. They're actually touch controls, which makes them a little hard to find by feel. I would be a lot happier if they put a little rubber bump. So you can find them, you know, if you're working by touch. But each button has two functions. If you tap it, it does one. If you hold it, it does the other function. So the first button, if you tap it, you skip to the next track. If you hold it, it turns the volume down.
Hmm. So the one test that we haven't been able to put this thing through yet is, you know, several days of pretty constant use or taking a look at its longevity yet, so we'll have to report
right
back on that.
Battery life, I didn't get around to testing to shut down. Now, I did have the speaker on for several hours while I was writing the review, which appears on boomertechradio.com, along with some pictures of the speaker. And but it played at a pretty solid volume for about 6 hours. The rated battery life is 14 hours at an average listening level. So that's pretty good. It's not a weatherproof speaker. It's pretty rugged. But I wouldn't. I would be careful not to leave it outside in the rain, or take it out on a boat or something like that. Other than that, though, the build quality. Given the fact this thing is only $50 on Amazon,
it's pretty amazing.
It's a pretty impressive buy for the buck. So I would recommend if you're looking for a good little Bluetooth speaker that if something happens to it, you're not out a couple of $100s. The iClever BTS 08 available on Amazon.
Yeah. Certainly one you might want to consider.
Yeah. So if you want to get a Bluetooth speaker, that's the one I would recommend right now. The Bose, I think both the Bose and the iHome we picked up at Costco. So you'll occasionally find some. The trouble with buying some of these things at Costco is that nobody there has the slightest idea what this stuff is.
No, they don't know.
Either
they
that,
get
or
they to do your research.
Either that, or they don't know anything about what it sounds like, how it works.
Now, given a choice, I would rather go get something at Costco than I would say off of Amazon. But Costco, you don't know from week to week whether the thing is still going to be on the shelf. I've seen stuff at Costco that, oh, yeah, and I go back to get it, and it's not there anymore.
They rotate stock all the time there.
Yeah.
Most of the time, though, if Costco has it, it's usually a pretty decent device. It's not too bad because they don't like a lot of returns. So if people start returning it, stay away from it.
So have you thought about getting a Roomba, Brenda?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. I get one for my cat.
Yeah, I know. Well, those are the best things. We have a cat that probably would ride the Roomba.
Well, Roomba, which is of course made by U.S. Robotics, or iRobot. I'm sorry. There's more of that I stuff. It's iClever, iHome. You know, now and iRobot makes the Roomba. But they start at about $300-$400, and they go up to $1,000 or so. But there's one available on Amazon called the Eufy RoboVac 11. It's the best-selling robot vacuum on Amazon, and it gets very good performance reviews. You charge this thing up, and then you turn it loose and leave the house, and it just roams around, has a pattern. And it's like those mystery trains that bump a wall and then change direction. But as it maps its environment, I guess, with sonar, and eventually builds a map of the room. And so it makes sure that it finds all the little nooks and crannies, and it has enough power actually to suck up a fair amount of dirt.
Well, that might be better than the lack of vacuuming that I get around to because I don't have time to do it. So in that sense, but if there are $400 to $1,000. Ooh, man, I can do a lot of vacuuming for that price with a much cheaper vacuum.
Well, this one's $169.
Oh, that's
so
not
as
bad.
An entry level vacuum unit. Longevity, we don't know yet, but
somebody still has to empty it.
Yeah, it still has to be emptied. Cell phone news. This is the week that the new Samsung Galaxy S8 hit the market, and I'm looking for the article on it here.
Close to the beginning of the list.
Close to the beginning. And it's got a lot of interesting specifications. I'm waiting for somebody to get in there and get their hands on one. because the S8 is essentially – now, one thing I'm a little wary about with the S8 is that edge-to-edge display and a glass back. Because what – you know, phones are pretty rugged except if they fall. Now, we've got Urban Armor Gear cases on our Galaxies. What case is that? Is that a – I can't think of the name of the case that everybody – is that an OtterBox case?
I actually have no idea. It came with it. My company provided it with to me.
Oh, okay. So this is a company phone. Okay.
So it looks like a generic kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a generic. Now, we have these really nice little Urban Armor Gears that we're kind of fond of. Of course, they were given to us at the CES.
Yeah, I had to trade in my
didn't beat the price.
My ugly that I could find in my bag. This is a little harder to find in my bag, but I really like the case. I'm impressed with the Urban Armor Gear thing. But hey, can't pass up a freebie, right?
Yep. So the Infinity display is nice. This is very similar to you notice that the Edge display was a gimmick because it would actually wrap around the edge, but it also made the Galaxy S7 Edge a bit vulnerable to bumps, so we opted for the regular Galaxy S7.
And why wouldn't this one be as well?
Yeah. Edge displays are fragile. And if you put it in a case, now you're going to lose a portion of the display.
Well, yeah, it remains to be seen what those cases look like. But I don't – what's the big deal about a wrapped-around screen?
Some people think that not having a bezel, any bezel at all, the Infinity display is sexy. You know.
I guess, but what I find when I look at them is you lose something anyway because the silly screen curves – and you don't have, you know, that straight-on full-screen view anyway. So, I don't know. I'd have to see one.
Doesn't the touch screen go to the edges a little bit on those?
I think so. So
that's another advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, if all the things on the side, you can use the touch screen interface for something on the edges of the phone, mm-hmm. that could definitely be a benefit rather than a detriment.
Now, the screen, if you put it into landscape mode, is actually wider than the 16:9 format of most movies.
Right.
So it's more like 22:9, I think, is the aspect ratio. So your movies are either going to stretch out or have pillar boxes.
So what?
Well, for some people, that's...
Stretching out, I don't like, because, you know, then you get weirdo face. But if you have pillar bars, who cares?
For some people, that they... Well, remember when Letterbox movies were out, people were just freaking out.
I don't really want to watch a movie on the little tiny screen anyway.
Yeah.
Just because it's so little.
Another feature that Samsung is bringing out with the Galaxy S8 is, in other words, rather than just touch once or touch hold, the amount of pressure that you put on the screen. I'm not sure how they accomplish this. Maybe it's the amount of finger that gets pushed onto the touch sensitive surface.
Well, probably has a pressure sensitivity. I mean, you know, they have those drawing tablets and all that. Those are all touch or pressure sensitive. So I can easily imagine them being able to put that in a phone these days. How hard you're pushing the button or pushing the screen.
Yeah. Now I had and I seem to have misplaced it. I had a story about the deals that Verizon was offering I think the phones are in the $750, $800 range. And yeah, I had the exact prices, and I have misplaced the article on it.
And no, you don't need a new one. You're not going to get a new one. I don't care if it's new and you can trade that in on your plan. Uh-uh.
Well, for those people who opted into the auto upgrade, something like that. Yeah.
Most everybody has those sorts of plans for people who just can't wait for the next.
Need the newest
iteration.
Run
need the
right away.
That's right. I need it right now.
I like to stay about one generation back, actually. You know, because if you're on the cutting edge, that's nice, and everybody goes ooh and ah. But those are the ones where you have to work out the problems.
This is utterly meaningless, and has nothing to do with function. But I like the name of their personal assistant. You know, their Siri with Apple and Google's on Android. But on this particular phone, they have Bixby now.
Bixby.
Yeah, and apparently you say, hello, Bixby. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what happens
I'm
when...
I'm not sure what the reference is on that.
I'm not sure either, but it's like trigger words for the Amazon Echo. And
which we try not to say on
yes.
the show.
Well, in the case of ours, the word comes along in everyday conversation. So it says, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Yep.
It's pretty interesting. So there's a couple other features, but this article is just about some of the things that are happening. One thing of note, though, is that the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack is still
Didn't do away with the jack. Yes, that means S8. That your old plug-in stuff is still going to work with it. I mean, Bluetooth is great, but there's times when you want to have that hardwire connection.
Just a little earbuds would be nice sometimes.
Yeah. Yes, it's true.
Little cheap $5 earbuds that you don't have to...
Yeah, I don't want to pay, Apple's AirPods. Very nice, very sexy, very trendy. And if one falls out of your pocket, you're out $250.
Yeah, it shatters upon hitting the ground, I'm sure.
Undoubtedly, or, you inadvertently step on it, or it gets lost in the grass, down the
or
drain.
Or it goes through the washer.
There's that too. And I like this idea because I have a little wind meter that plugs into the headphone jack in order to read out on the app. So it's like, yay, I don't have to get the Bluetooth version.
My iClip movie stabilizer with that adapts a professional microphone into the input of the phone, that requires the 3.5 millimeter jack.
Yep. So. There's still a lot of utility to it. They haven't come up with...
So give me my jack back.
Yeah. They haven't come up with some reliable reason to not have one. Just because Apple can, they do, right?
Yeah. So there's actually going to be a Microsoft edition of the Galaxy S8. Rather than coming with Android, Microsoft, after having failed miserably at bringing out the Windows phone on their third try... they're actually giving in, and rather than customizing their own hardware, they're going to customize, much like Barnes & Noble did with their Nook reader, which is actually a repurposed Samsung. Microsoft is going to repurpose a Samsung phone to run a version of Windows.
So that doesn't have anything to do with the potential... anticipation, I guess I should say, that the S8's going to be able to replace the laptop or, you're going to be able to do all this
well,
stuff.
Well, as a matter of fact, that kind of leads me into the next thing I wanted to talk about here is that the S8 is very, very powerful. And one of the accessories that's been shown to reporters, now this is not on the market yet, but it definitely has some people thinking, is that you're going to be able to dock the S8 on your desk, and then the display goes up on a big screen, and you'll be able to type in with a full-size keyboard. Now, I've already got a keyboard that if I wanted to, I could type into the phone, but I'm staring at that 5.5-inch screen, which is a little tough.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of cool. Now, there's been attempts to do this before. There's been attempts to take a smartphone, snap it into the back of a tablet. In fact, we talked about one a couple of weeks ago, where the tablet's just an extension of the smartphone. But that's another thing to carry around.
Well,
right, you're carrying around that nice big screen on the tablet.
Yeah. So, but it looks like the S8, you're going to be able, and this is aimed at road warriors and folks like that, where you're hauling around one device to rule them all, one ring to rule them all, and then you come home. Or you get to the office and you park this thing on the USB-C connector. And I think that's one big thing that this no longer uses the micro USB. It uses USB-C, which is higher current, better quality, will pass video and audio and power all at the same time. So you take this thing and you plug it into the dock, and now you can just continue working. But your documents are being stored on the phone through the cloud.
Right. It's kind of like how laptop docks work. I mean, they've had laptop docks forever.
Yeah, long time.
You just take your laptop around and plug it into the docks to work off of, a normal-sized monitor, keyboard, mouse, etc.
And so, because really, basically, the phone is just acting as your memory stick, only it has some standalone capabilities. You had an operating system on a memory stick that you carried around in your pocket and would boot up. I remember you packed that around with you everywhere, right?
The operating system?
Yeah, you had a USB stick you would plug in and boot up the computer, right?
I don't think so.
I think you did. Pretty sure that was you. You brought it over one fine day and booted it up into a... I thought you were showing that to me. This was some years ago. At least I thought it was. Oh, anyway. But this is something I'm thinking that Samsung might finally get this right, because companies have been trying to, and this is something that Apple should have done. They had the opening on this with the, but instead they wanted to sell, they wanted to make the Mac, the pad, and the phone three separate devices, because you have to buy three things. People don't want to buy three things.
Yeah, well, you know. Who wants to pack around a bunch of stuff? You do. Your bag is ridiculously heavy.
Hey, we got one more segment coming back. We're going to have an interview with the CEO of Nexia talking about home integration and their new Wi-Fi cameras that we've had a chance to play with. It's Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda and Alan, back after these messages. And we're back with Boomer Attack Radio with Bob and Brenda and Alan. By the way, the theme music, which sounds reminiscent of an old Atari game, is in fact called 8-Bit Junkie. It is composed and performed by George Wood. It's off the PodSafe Music Network. We thought it'd be a handy-dandy theme song. And we wrote to George and got permission to do it. And here it is on Boomer Attack Radio. So, Alan, what kind of stories do you think you would like to cover for a internationally broadcast tech show?
I'll bring any sort of video game news that people might be vaguely aware of, have some sort of interest in, you know, just major highlights. I won't go into any sort of details, but I like interesting things, like things that are going to be useful somehow or just fascinating, like they got the new Adobe programs coming out and Google's talking about new JavaScript changes and just things that you might see crop up here and there.
Brenda and I have been to CES several times, and we have seen products that somebody is so proud of, and we're standing there looking at it going, really thought people were going to shell out money for this?
Going to go nowhere.
Like five people are going to buy that thing.
If you're lucky. The thing that I notice is that if my reaction is, oh, that is so passe, it usually is. And it's like by the time these people have gotten to production, it's a has-been.
The happy fork.
Yeah,
the love box.
Well, the happy fork and the love box, those are in a category all by themselves.
The iPod-y.
Yeah. That actually could have long-term use.
Need some marketing research first before you start going into production there, buddy.
Yeah, and they may have, and yet, you know, marketing research is like anything else. If you, you know, have a very narrow sampling of people that you know, ask your friends and relatives, right? Of course they're going to tell you it's
right.
Great.
You get a bunch of yes men. That's not going to do you any good.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely agree. You got to follow trends and kind of have an idea.
Yeah, I totally would love to get this thing. Yeah, that looks great.
Bless their hearts, though. They were out there doing something.
Yeah, they were.
I don't think this product you're about
to... They were casting their lines into the water,
yes,
hoping that something would bite.
This thing you're about to introduce or talk about or have the interview with now, is not like one of those.
Right. Now, when we were at CES, we had the pleasure of meeting the folks at Nexia Home Automation. Now, Nexia, as you'll hear in the interview, is a division of Ingersoll Rand, which is a big, if you've ever been to a construction site and you see the big air compressors and power machinery, you may see some Ingersoll Rand equipment. Well, they've moved into doing some home automation, and Ingersoll Rand owns Trane, air conditioner stuff. So they kind of know what they're talking about, and we'll find out a little bit about some cameras that we've been playing with when we come back after this interview that I held recorded earlier today, some thoughts on internet-connected cameras, the good parts and the bad parts.
To record in 3, 2, 1. Boomer Tech Radio, it's Bob Belongi along with Brenda Belongi, and on the phone with us right now we have George Land. He's the general manager of Nexia, which is a company that is specializing in home automation. George, welcome to Boomer Tech. Tell me a little bit about the company Nexia, including who's behind it.
Sure, yeah, great to be here this morning. Thanks for having me. Nexia is, as you said, a smart home service. We're part of the Trane residential heating and air business, which is part of the global industrial company Ingersoll Rand. So we've been in the business for a long time. Started off, you know, many years ago, 8 years plus, with a BlackBerry app back in those days, and have grown into a full-functioned, you know, smart home system since then.
Now, George, we've been hearing about connected homes. I was into home automation back in the days of AMX, running the cables and the specialized touch screens and all that back in the 1990s. Obviously, we've come with IP connection rather than dedicated lines. We've come a long way on this. But where are we at right now in the state of the art of home automation?
Yeah, as you say, several fundamental things have occurred that have really made this a technology that's just a great part of everyday life. The first thing, of course, is the mobile apps and smartphones. Second is, as you mentioned, live broadband internet in everybody's home, which really enables a world of possibilities. And then third is wireless technology. So no more do we have to run wires to all the sensors and those kind of things. We have wireless technology, which allows products to communicate very simply with very minimal installation effort.
Now, do-it-yourselfers can, of course, go out and they can get they can do a little shopping on Amazon, whoever. They can get the $39 camera from some Chinese source. They can get a low-end thermostat. Now, a couple of years ago, I got a Nest thermostat, which works pretty good still. And then you can get lighting controller from somebody else. And then you can try to figure out how to get all this stuff to talk to each other. And the problem I'm seeing for a lot of consumers is that right now there's still a host of protocols. We don't yet have one ring to rule them all, do we?
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a lot of great standalone connected products where you can buy, as you said, a camera or a thermostat or whatever, and get an app with it. And then many people enjoy the functionality of those connected products, but then they start to see, now I've got two, three, four connected products, and they don't talk to each other, they don't work together, they don't collaborate or allow you to control them as a group. And then you've got sort of high-end systems that are custom designed, custom installed, and are really a closed system where everything is purchased from one person and integrated together by a local firm. And that tends to be a higher-end, as I say, custom system. And then we kind of fall in the middle where it's a curated system where you have a service, you have an app that allows you to choose among a variety of different products and have a great experience with the individual products, but then also allow to manage them and work with them and automate them together as a system, as a truly smart home.
A lot of these products, when they first came out, and there's been several very noted stories of, in the case of the Chinese cameras, and even in the case of some major products where the designers got the product on the market, but left gaping holes in the security, and several famous hacks of baby cameras and things like that have got consumers a little gun shy. How do you overcome that? How do you get the confidence that consumers aren't opening their home to anybody who wants to come in and cause mayhem? What is being done on the security front that you can have these conveniences and not leave yourself wide open?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one that's on the forefront of many people's minds as they look at this type of system. And you know, if you look at how those vulnerabilities occurred that you mentioned, it's really around the firewall in your house. So as your home Wi-Fi router, it protects against any connections coming into the home. And so you can access the internet from the home going out, but it won't let anything in. Well, the ways a lot of those individual products work is they require you to open a hole in your firewall, essentially, so that you can, with your mobile app or whatever, dial into the home. And, of course, that allows anybody in the world to dial into your home. And so fundamentally, we don't do that, and companies like Nexia don't do that. Everything in the home is designed to only call out and call out to a server that's very rigorously protected, and then your phone app or whatever calls in the server as well. So all of that is technical gobbledygook to people, but what it really means is when you use a service like Nexia, we spend a lot of time looking at the overall system design to make sure that it's as secure as possible and to eliminate those vulnerabilities where they occur.
Now, I was recently sent a couple of cameras, the Wi-Fi wide-angle indoor and the HD outdoor camera, and I have to say that I'm fairly impressed with the build quality, and the setup works if you take the time to read the directions. If Joe Guy at home takes this thing out of the box, sticks it on the wall and turns it on and then complains that it doesn't work, it's because he hasn't read the direction. There is a certain setup process. So there's a little education, but it appears to me that most of your products are very much aimed at the person who will take a little time, read the instructions, but they don't have to call in a specialty installation company. Obviously, there are companies that will integrate systems, but this looks to me, the entire Nexia home system looks to be a very scalable system. So can you describe that philosophy for me?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, we work every day to try and make the installation and setup process as intuitive and seamless as possible. Some of those steps we talk about reading instructions are really around your prior question around security. So sometimes some of those protections, some of the security protections that require some of those extra steps where you have to confirm, a certain code off the back of the camera or whatever versus just turning it on, which would require certain security compromises. So we're always working to find solutions to improve the simplicity and the intuitiveness without ever giving up on those security realms. But overall, our system, we find that many people prefer to have the system initially professionally installed. But then the system is simple enough for everyday changes and expansion. You want to add a device, you want to reconfigure whatever, to take that on yourself. So we find that while the system is really suited to do-it-yourself installation, a lot of people start with a professional install just to get them over that initial hump of understanding how everything goes together.
Now, do you have a network of certified installers, or is this something that any competent home automation or telecommunications installer can get into?
Yeah, both. So we do have a network of installers, and we also, as I said, it was originally designed, and it's always a principle of ours, that everything is do-it-yourself friendly and ready. And so any competent installer would be able to install it on a consumer's behalf, or the consumer who's wants to take on the job would find it quite easy, I think.
So there's a hub controller, and I'm wondering, I have a Nest thermostat. Will the Nest thermostat talk to the Nexia hub?
Well, so the Nest thermostat will talk to the Nexia service. It doesn't actually talk to the hub. So the hub, or as we call it, a bridge, is really a bridge to take the network in the home and take those wireless devices and get them back to the cloud, to the service. And then we also talk not only to our bridge, but also to many third-party services. So Nest is one. We have irrigation partners, appliance partners, and so forth and so on. And then, so our app allows you to bring all those things together into one managed smart home.
One of the things that has been brought up by folks who are concerned about privacy and security is that, say, in the case of a thermostat that is tracking your usage, there are concerns that ultimately your usage of, what you set your thermostat for, the hours that you set it, and, leaving your lights on in certain rooms, that information is going to be shared maybe with agencies. What is Nexia's policy on that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's one of the fundamental, a core value of our company. We are a paid service. We charge a monthly fee, and so it's a very simple business model. Is we're selling consumers a service. And so our position is all of the data belongs to the consumer and is only used for the purposes of delivering the service. So we're not giving away a service to entice consumers to give us the data in which we can then sell the data. That's not how we choose to approach it. So, for example, the thermostat data, we give the consumers the choice to share that data with their HVAC servicing contractor or not. That's their choice.
So we're seeing when we were talking about now Trane, of course, is one of the big hitters in home comfort. Can these systems actually let the factory know that there's an impending issue, and then the company lets the consumer know that, hey, there is an impending issue? Is that part of the package?
That's right. So that's something the consumer can opt into or opt out of. But we do have a heating and air conditioning diagnostic system that can communicate with the thermostat, and the system can alert when there's a, like, as you said, when there's a pending issue, and proactively allow you to get your system addressed. Sometimes the comfort in the home is still perfectly acceptable, but you may be wasting energy because the system may be running on reduced efficiency if there's a certain problem. So in a lot of ways, those diagnostic systems help prevent both wasted energy and also discomfort.
One of the things I noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, it appears that while the cameras will send me a notification on my phone through the Nexia app that there's been motion detected, that you can also have macros ready to go so that at night, if the camera sees a motion, it kicks on maybe the yard lights or institutes other actions based on, so you get kind of a if-then sort of structure. Is that something that you think consumers are really going to be able to get into with the help maybe of a systems integrator?
Absolutely. And it's really something consumers can do themselves. So it's really where the power of having an overall system like Nexia compared to individual connected devices comes in. So as you said, if the camera detects motion on the front porch after dark, turn on the porch light. Those types of interactions among devices are really where the value starts to grow exponentially for consumers. And we see at the point where the consumer has 4, 5, 6 devices in the home, that's when they really begin to engage with these, what you call a macro, we call it an automation, basically saying, you know, if this happens, then I want that to happen across devices. So at my house, at 10 p.m., I want the doors to lock, the lights to turn off, make sure the garage door is closed, set the thermostat to the temperature we like for sleeping. That's all, just happens every night at 10.
Well, at the risk of dating myself, it looks like we've come a long way since X10 systems.
Absolutely.
Anybody who used to do home automation knows all about those. What other products? It looks like you've got, looking at the Nexia website, just a huge range of products. Where do you see home automation, put on your crystal ball for a minute. Where do you see home automation going in the next couple of years?
Well, I think in the coming future, people won't think about home automation. They'll just think about the way they live in their home, and their home will be smart, right? We do have a wide variety of different types of devices that we integrate with and let you manage together. The sort of the core pieces are, the managing your comfort with your thermostat, managing your security with your locks and sensors, garage door controller, and then managing risks like with water sensors, smoke detectors, those kind of things, particularly in maybe a second home or an occupied property. And so I think as those solutions become more prevalent, people become used to living with those types of connected products and integrate them into smart home, they won't really think about it being home automation or a smart home, and they'll just be that's the way you live in a home. That's what homes do.
Awesome. I do have to. One of the big things at CES was integration with the woman who shall not be named or lives in a little cylinder from Amazon. I do that because I have people tell me I trigger their echoes with my show. Is there integration with that system, with the Amazon Echo assistant?
Yeah, we found very high consumer engagement with the voice assistants. So for many years, the strongest value proposition for using Nexia or a service like ours was staying connected to your home when you were away from the home. So making sure the door's locked when you're there, did I remember to close the garage door this morning, turning the air on before I come home, those kind of things. But really the voice assistant penetration in the market over the last year has really changed the way you live in a smart home. So sitting on the couch and saying, you know, it's cold in here, and hearing back, okay, I'll raise the temperature 2 degrees. And that's really transforming the way people experience living in the home versus just staying connected to it while they're not there.
We're on Captain Picard's bridge. well, that I have to say that I was very impressed with the build quality of the Wi-Fi and HD outdoor cameras. Having looked at several of these products and really kind of taken, you know, scratch my head over who thought that was a good idea. These two cameras appear to be very good. I was able to set them up in fairly short order. So good marks to the company on that. I'll have probably a more complete, I will have a more complete review of the Nexia Wi-Fi enabled cameras in the next couple of episodes. But George, anything else you want to add as we get ready to wrap up here on this segment of Boomer Tech?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. It's great to be able to share a little bit about what we have to offer.
All righty.
And with that is NexiaHome.com, and we really have enjoyed having those little cameras, easy to set up. And if you're concerned about, you know, having somebody having eyeballs in your house, you set up your router properly. And don't go with a cheap, cheesy $39 Amazon camera. Get one of the major brands. And as you heard George talk about on his interview, they put their customers' security is part of their stock and trade. So, Alan, in the couple of minutes we have left, you had a story up there about for those. Okay, we're going to take it back a step from there. People hear about Java, and it's what is, in terms that I can understand, what is Java?
Java's a lot of the type of way that certain programs run. A lot of it's integrated into your web browser when you're looking in websites. Like, pretty much anything that's extra fancy, that's not just text on the page, oftentimes is run in JavaScript, which is like if you get any pop-ups within or when you hit something and it moves around on the screen, a lot of it is all in JavaScript, different type of programming language that's not HTML.
So how does that compare to, say, Flash?
Flash is a whole self-contained application that's just put on a page. They're somewhat similar sometimes. Flash, oftentimes, when you have it run, it comes up on the screen. It's usually kind of obvious that it is a Flash player going on. But
well, the big thing we've heard about Flash is that how insecure it is, and there was a big peeing contest between Apple and Adobe over the perceived problems. But Firefox browser by default no longer supports Flash, and I guess the Windows 10 Creators Update, which we didn't even get to talk about, is going to have Flash turned off by default. You have to actually enable it,
right?
To turn it on.
And a lot of websites are moving away from Flash in general, just because of the large amounts of security holes that it creates.
Right. I was surprised. I've seen some sites that apparently they're heavily invested and they don't want to have to completely revamp their stuff over to HTML5. And so people are having to turn turn Flash back on. And of course, if you have an iPad or an iDevice, you can't use Flash at all. It simply won't load it. Because Steve Jobs said, no, Flash is no good.
Flash is no good. It used to be part of the internet, big part of the internet, and then it's just going to be going away. That just happens with technology, though.
Well, that's all the time for this episode. We want to thank our co-host, Alan Belongi. It's Bob and Brenda saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe. Be good to each other.